If you will open your Bibles and turn to Mark 5 this morning. Mark chapter 5, we're going to be looking pretty much dead center of this chapter. Verse 25 is where we're going to begin. If you've been following along the last few weeks, you might have noticed I skipped a number of verses, and that was on purpose. We're going to come back to those verses next week, because what we have before us this morning is kind of a story within a story. So we're going to look at the one story, and then we'll go back and look at the other story next week. So let me just read it for us from Mark 5, verse 25. It says, "And a certain woman, which had an issue of blood 12 years, and had suffered many things of many physicians, and had spent all that she had, and was nothing better, but rather grew worse. When she had heard of Jesus, came in the press behind and touched his garment. For she said, 'If I may touch but his clothes, I shall be whole.' And straightway the fountain of her blood was dried up, and she felt in her body that she was healed of that plague. And Jesus, immediately knowing in himself that virtue had gone out of him, turned him about in the press and said, 'Who touched my clothes?' And his disciples said unto him, 'Thou seest the multitude thronging thee, and sayest thou, Who touched me?' And he looked round about to see her that had done this thing. But the woman, fearing and trembling, knowing what was done in her, came and fell down before him and told him all the truth. And he said unto her, 'Daughter, thy faith have made thee whole. Go in peace. Be whole of thy plague.'" As we've gone through Mark 4 and 5, what we see is there are four really remarkable miracles that all occur within a very short span of time. In fact, they all occur within 48 hours. And each of them is dramatic. Each of them is incredibly powerful, these miracles. We saw the first two already in Mark chapter 4. Jesus is sailing across the Sea of Galilee. He and his disciples are caught in a terrific storm. The storm terrified the disciples. It nearly sank the fishing vessel. Jesus awoke. He was woken up by the fearful disciples. And he stopped the storm. He calmed the water with just a couple quick, very short commands. And upon reaching the southeast shore of the Sea of Galilee, Jesus was confronted by a man possessed by thousands of demons. And at Jesus' command, those demons were driven out of the man. They fled, and well, we don't know from there what happened, but they fled out of this man. And the people in that area pleaded with Jesus, begged him to leave. And so Jesus returned to his ship and sailed the 11 miles back across the Sea of Galilee to the northwest region of the Sea of Galilee, to that region around Capernaum. And upon arriving there in Capernaum, Jesus is met by a massive crowd. And in that massive crowd, there was a certain ruler of the synagogue who we're going to be discussing next week, who had a request, which we'll also be discussing next week. And so as Jesus is responding to this request, he walks through the town, and as he does so, the crowd just press in. I love the disciples' word. They thronged him. Very descriptive in my mind. They're just this huge crowd of people that are clamoring to reach him, pressing in and surrounding him. And in the midst of this crowd, a certain woman pushes her way through until she is in a position that she can just reach out and touch the tassels on the edge of his garments. And what I want to do this morning is I want to take a few minutes and consider this lady and this account, because it is a remarkable, remarkable story here set within the greater story of this chapter and the greater story of the book of Mark. And this is one of these accounts that I would love just to spend a few hours with you, just looking at all the ins and outs. And I'm not going to do that to you this morning. But there is so much here that is worth our consideration. But what I want us to do is take a few minutes and see her condition, to see her healing, and to see her salvation. And the first thing we see here, verse 25, is that this lady's problem. It says she had an issue of blood 12 years. Matthew, Mark, and Luke all say she had an issue or a discharge of blood for 12 years. Now, her problem is not hemophilia. It's not that she cut herself and doesn't stop bleeding. It's a disorder of some sort of either a menstrual disorder or it's some sort of uterine bleed. It is that kind of discharge. And she has had this for 12 years. And so for 12 years, she has been afflicted and has gone to doctor after doctor. And look at verse 26. Mark is really just, as he does so much in this book, he's piling on these things to kind of try to give us a vivid picture of what's happened. She's had this bleed, this discharge for 12 years, and she has suffered many things of many physicians and had spent all that she had and was not at all bettered, but was in fact worse as a result of it. She has gone to doctor after doctor after doctor after doctor. She has tried remedy after remedy after remedy after remedy after remedy. She has tried everything imaginable, everything reputable and everything ridiculous. Every good doctor and every bad doctor. She apparently has just tried it all and nothing has helped. And not only has it not helped, she is now worse off than she was when she began 12 years before. She's broke. She spent everything she's had trying to find a cure. But not only is she broke, her condition is worsened. So the doctors haven't helped her in the least. And she's afflicted by this order, and she's afflicted by the physicians who are supposed to be helping her. She's in and really just an absolutely hopeless, helpless state. But more than that, it's not just a physical problem that she's dealing with. And we've seen this a number of times in Mark already, and we see it again here. Her problem is also a spiritual problem. Now I don't mean that she has this disorder because of some particular sin she did. That's not what I mean when I say it's a spiritual problem. What I mean is if we were to go back to the law of Moses, specifically the Leviticus chapter 15, we would find that this poor woman has spent the last 12 years of her life unclean. We remember the leper in Mark chapter 1. This man that came into the synagogue and cried out to Jesus, and Jesus, Mark chapter 2, he came to Jesus and cried out, and Jesus healed him. This leper was unclean. Because of his leprosy, because of the nature of his disease, he was completely unable to enter into the worship of God. He could have no part of the feast, no part of the sacrifices. He could not come into the temple precincts. In fact, anyone who came in contact with him was unclean by the mere contact with him. We saw last week, as we were discussing the demoniac, we saw that any man or any woman who touched a grave was unclean, and for the rest of that day was unable to enter into any of the worship of God. And in the same fashion, every woman in Israel was ceremonially unclean once a month with her menstruation. It was a part of the Levitical law that she was unclean for a period of 7 days and as much longer as she continued to have an issue of blood. And so this woman was 12 years unclean. She was unable to have any part of the temple worship. She could not bring sacrifice to God at all. She was unable to participate in the feast and the festivals. She was completely separated from all worship of God. Her condition is really not much different from that of the leper. She is just completely set apart, and she would have been ostracized, because at that time they would have certainly been teaching that anybody that touched her would also become unclean. And so she would have spent the last 12 years really in a spiritually hopeless condition. So physically, she's hopeless. She's helpless. Spiritually, she is just as hopeless. She has no chance of entering into the worship of God until this disorder is dealt with. And she is, it's a pitiable, it's a tragic condition that she is in. And it says, when she heard of Jesus, and I don't think this is the first time she has heard of him. I think Mark is saying when she heard Jesus had returned to the area, something of that sort, when she heard Jesus was back in town. Because she has probably been very aware of Jesus for at least some months. I think we can reasonably say she has been a part of the crowds that has listened to his teaching. She has almost certainly seen at least one or more likely many of Jesus' miracles. And so when Jesus returns to Capernaum, she is part of the crowd that flocks to him. And she presses forward through this huge crowd, and she is just close enough to touch his garments. And look at her faith. Verse 28, she said, if I may touch but his clothes, I shall be whole. She has suffered so much at the hands of doctors. She has probably been cut off from many of her family and many of her friends. And now she is, I think she's in a point here of just being so beaten down, of so despairing, that she is afraid to even speak to Jesus. She doesn't doubt his ability to heal her, nor does she seem to doubt his willingness to heal her. But she has suffered so much that she approaches with great timidity. She is afraid to come before him. She's probably afraid to state in public her condition. But she does not doubt his ability to heal. She believes that if she just touches the very fringe of his robe, she'll be healed. And it tells us, and this is one of these interesting things that I don't want us to miss. I know we're not in that culture. We don't dress like they do. We don't think much like they did. But when God gave the law to Israel, he commanded the Israelites to sew tassels onto the edges of the robes. So all of their robes had these little tassels hanging off of them, and they were to be a reminder to the Israelites of the commands of the law. They were given just as a constant reminder. So every time they saw these tassels, they were to think of and be reminded of the law. And Jesus, as an observant Jew, as a devout Orthodox Jew, however you might want to say it, as an obedient Jew, and also as a notable rabbi, he would have had these tassels on the edges of his robe. They would have been, all hanging off the hem of his robe. Now, turn in your Bibles to Malachi. It's actually only two books back. The last book of the Old Testament. Malachi chapter 4:2. Helps if I look in Malachi and not Matthew. When you go to Matthew, go back one more. Malachi 4, verse 2. This is and the Old Testament actually ends with this glorious promise of the Messiah. What we see in Malachi 4 is this promise of the coming Messiah. In verse 2, it says, but unto you that fear my name shall the Son of Righteousness. Now, probably many of your translations have that word Son capitalized. It is absolutely a prophecy about the Messiah. So he's saying that Malachi is saying the Son, the Messiah, the Son of Righteousness is going to come, and to you that fear him, he is going to arise. And then it says, with healing in his wings. Now it's not wings in the sense of something a chicken has. It is, in fact, the word it wings is fringe, border, hem. It's the edge. And I think we can draw a reasonable connection here. Certainly this passage is a prophecy of the Messiah stating that he is going to bring with him healings. And that this, I think we can reasonably surmise that this woman knew this verse. She said, if I can just touch the wing, the edge, the fringe of his garment, I will be healed. Her faith, regardless of that, even if I'm off on my speculation there, her faith is obviously such that she believed just coming to touch the hem of his garment, just that little contact will bring to her healing. She has no doubt that he is the Messiah, that he's able to heal her of her disease. In fact, Jesus commends her for her faith. And then it tells us, verse 29, immediately the fountain of her blood was dried up, and she felt in her body that she was healed of that plague. She was immediately healed. She reached out and just touches the tassel on the end of his garment. And because she has done so in faith, she is immediately, instantaneously, fully, completely healed. Now this is not that it begins the process of healing and she goes home and recovers over the course of the next few days or few months. Just as every other healing that we've seen in the Gospels here is an instantaneous, full, complete healing, she is fully healed, not just of the outward symptoms, but whatever the internal disorder was that caused it, she is fully, completely, remarkably, miraculously healed. And it tells us that Jesus also immediately knew what had happened. Immediately knowing in himself that virtue had gone out of him, he stopped. He turned around in this huge crowd and he asked the question, who touched my clothes? Now, I think at this point, the disciples' response is pretty natural. I mean, can you picture this scene? Jesus is surrounded by this huge crowd trying to push forward to try to get as close to him as possible, probably trying to touch him, trying to hear him. If you've ever seen recordings or videos of a huge celebrity walking through the crowds, you know, he arrives in the airplane and he's coming down into his limo, wherever it may be, and there's crowds all crowded around, or they're getting out of the limo to walk up the red carpet, and, you know, they're just thronged by people. And what are they doing? They're clamoring to get as close as possible, to get his attention, to just touch him on the arm or the shoulder, or just to have him notice him. And then all of this is going on, and I'm sure the scene was just about chaos. And he says, who touched me? He just stops, turns around and says, who touched me? What? And his disciples, I think the response is perfectly natural. He says, what are you talking about? Look at the crowds. You see the multitude thronging you. Why do you say, who touched me? In verse 32, he looked around about to see her that had done this thing. He doesn't respond to their question. He keeps looking for her. And I think, just as an aside, I think there's a lot of mercy in this question. I know he did not ask it to embarrass her. I think there's a huge amount of mercy here because his question brings her forward, and he's able to, and now gives to her the comfort that's found in verse 34. But verse 33, before we get to the comfort, it says the woman fearing and trembling. She knew what had happened to her. She knew she had been healed. But still she was terrified. Now, if you remember chapter 4, when the disciples saw Jesus calm the storm, they were afraid. Same word. They were afraid and they said, what manner of man is this? And when the Gadarenes saw Jesus heal the demoniac, they were afraid. Same word. And they asked him to leave their country. Again, just unthinkable there. This poor woman knew what had been done in her and she was afraid. But she came and confessed all to him. Same fear, so many different responses to Christ. And this woman, just to, again, to give us a little bit more of the cultural background here, she has a legitimate cause to be fearful. The Pharisees believed that to be touched by an unclean person was to become unclean. What she had done, according to their traditions, was made Jesus unclean. Not in actuality, but according to their traditions. And I'm certain she is expecting to be rebuked. She has spent the last 12 years of her life being shunned. Though everyone who knew of her disorder would have been very careful to distance themselves from her. And I'm sure she was expecting Jesus to chastise her for the gall of reaching out and touching his robe like that. But he does not do so. He comforts her. He says, "Daughter, thy faith have made thee whole. Go in peace and be whole of thy plague." Jesus never rebukes those who come to him in faith. He never condemns them as too wicked, as too unclean, as too despicable. He never chides them for waiting too long. His universal response, without fail, in scriptures, has always been, when we turn to him, when anyone turns to him in faith, it is a response of compassion and a response of cleansing. And Christ responds in exactly the same way to this woman. And so I want to just briefly point out three things here in Jesus' response. First, Jesus commends her faith. And I think this woman here is just a brilliant example of genuine biblical faith. I know we have great heroes of the faith. We read Hebrews 11, we see a list of mighty heroes of the faith. We think of Paul, we think of Peter, we think of others that have written the books of the New Testament and written books in the Old Testament. We think of these mighty figures of the faith. And they are that. That's one reason many of them are listed in Hebrews 11. But we also have here a glorious picture of genuine biblical faith. As this woman comes without any hope, without any power, without anything to offer, just with the smallest thread of hope that if she touches his garment, she'll be cleansed. And tragically, some today have redefined and reimagined faith as a spiritual power that we exert. And some have even taught, and again, tragically, some of those popular teachers in the world have taught that faith is a spiritual law of sorts, that if you have the right kind and the right amount of faith, you can make God do anything. That faith has become a work of merit that God rewards with salvation or healing or riches or whatever it is that you desire. But we see this woman's faith. There's no work here. There is no power over Christ being exerted. She is desperate. She is afraid. She is uncertain about so many things, but there's one thing that she is certain of, and that is Jesus' power to heal. She is absolutely convinced if she just touches the hem of his garment, she will be healed. It is the faith of a drowning man clinging to his rescuer. That is biblical faith. It is faith that has come to the full end of itself and says, "I've got nothing to offer. I can do nothing here. All I can do is cry out and plead for deliverance. All I can do is turn to him and pray that he will deliver, that he will work." And because she has turned to the one who is able to deliver, she is healed. And that's the other thing about faith. It has to be in the right person. We see this woman, she has previously has trusted physician after physician after physician after physician. It was faith that, you know, she might have sincerely believed they could help her. Certainly desired and hoped they would help her. And they were able to do nothing for her. Any faith she may have had before was a faith in the wrong person. Because she was trusted these that were powerless to help her, she was never healed. But when she turned in faith to Jesus, she was fully healed. And again, this is a huge theme of Mark. Jesus is God. Jesus is God who can do all that He desires, who does all that He desires. I mean, this should call in our minds back to Mark chapter 2. As we saw the paralyzed man lowered down through the roof into the house to lay there before Jesus. And Jesus' first words to this man, "Son, your sins are forgiven." And if you remember that story, the Pharisees and the scribes said, "Who is this? Only God can forgive." Which is the point. Only God can forgive. And Jesus says, "So that you may know that I have power to forgive," He says to the man that is paralyzed, "Rise up and walk." He heals as a certain verification of His power as God. And faith is powerful only as the one believed in is powerful. The power of faith is not based upon the one expressing the faith, but the one in whom the faith is placed. And this is comforting. Man, this should comfort our hearts immensely. Because if we're honest with ourselves, we know so many times our faith is weak. If we're genuinely honest with ourselves, we know we have no ability to save ourselves. We have no ability to forgive ourselves, to draw us into right relationship with God. We have no merit. We have no power. We have no ability. And our faith confesses its worthlessness, its weakness, and its great need. And the faith that knows it is powerless reaches out to the one who has all power. And He heals. And He forgives. And this woman's apparently feeble faith was sufficient to bring her healing because it was placed in the one powerful enough to heal and to save. Jesus remarks and points out her faith. And then He says, "Your faith hath made thee whole." He comforted her because she believed. And His comfort certainly included healing of her physical ailment, but it was far greater than just physical healing. Many of our translations do say something along the lines of, "Your faith has made you whole." But in almost every other instance in the New Testament of that phrase, "made thee whole," it's actually it's translated as "saved" or "salvation." What Christ literally tells her is that her faith has saved her. She is saved. And that idea of salvation, of saved, is almost always referring to spiritual salvation. And I don't think we can read this story at all and think that Jesus said, "Your faith has saved you from your sickness." He's saying something else and something far greater here. Something far more important. Her faith has brought to her, by her faith, she has received spiritual salvation. Her faith has saved her from her sin. Because of her faith, she has been brought out of separation from God. I mean, she was really the classic picture of separated from God. She is in Israel and cannot come and worship God because of her disease. But Christ brings her out of this visible separation, out of this spiritual separation. And He doesn't just restore her into the ability to come into the temple. He goes miles beyond that. He takes her out of her separation. He says, "You are now saved. You are fully in a right relationship with God. Your sin is forgiven. You are reconciled to the Father."
So that because of Christ, she is eternally saved. She is no longer bound in sin. Not only is she no longer enslaved to this disorder, she is no longer enslaved to sin. She is no longer condemned in its guilt. She is no longer hopeless and despairing under the wrath of God. She has been taken out of that. And by the incredible power of God, has been placed into full fellowship with the Father and the Son and the Spirit. She has been eternally, fully, completely forgiven. And Christ's promise, Christ's comfort to her is salvation. She is now, because of Jesus, fully and eternally forgiven. And then Jesus says, go in peace and be whole of thy plague. Now he says, go in peace. You have peace. Again, she had come to him with anything but peace. She has come distressed. She's come fearful. She has come not even willing to approach him. She is so mentally and emotionally distraught. She is far from peace. But because of the great work that Christ has done in her, she leaves him healed and restored. She now has peace with God first, and she can go in peace with men. She need not live in fear anymore. She need not live in doubt and despair. She did not need to fear Jesus' anger at that moment, nor did she need to fear God's eternal wrath. She need not fear men would shun her, drive her out and away from worship of God. Now she can be at peace. She has the peace that Scriptures describes as the peace that passes all understanding. She has the promise that Paul later says, the God of peace shall be with you. And what we have in this passage is a glorious depiction of Jesus' compassion and his power. He delivers this poor woman from her hopeless and helpless condition. But he does more than that. He delivers her from her sin. The physicians that she sought after were unable to offer any healing. They weren't even able to lessen her disease. And Jesus saved her. He removed the disease. And then did so much more. And we see in this glorious display, but I want to point out a quick contrast here. Because her attempts to find a cure apart from Christ did not just leave her still in her sickness. They left her in a worse condition. Now just remind us, seeking after salvation, turning to anyone other than Christ for salvation, it doesn't just not save. It leaves in a really farther from where you were. It leaves you in a worse condition. And the greater tragedy there is those that would believe the quackery. Imagine this poor woman, how helpless and hopeless she would have been if she had believed that one of these physicians had brought her healing, when he had not. She would have been deceived and deceiving her own self so that she never found forgiveness. And the tragedy is when one believes the quackery of the false promises of salvation. Not only is there no salvation, now they're duped and deceived into turning from the only one who can bring salvation. And the point of this glorious passage here is only Jesus has the power to save. Only Jesus is sufficient to save. Only Jesus is compassionate to eternally save. And it is by calling out to Jesus in faith that there is forgiveness. It does not have to be the giant apostolic Pauline kind of faith that might stand up on the mountain and do mighty things. It may be the faith of a quaking, trembling woman who just reaches out her hand to touch a robe. But when we place our faith in the one who would save, he does. He does. It's a glorious promise. And I would say to you this morning that are saved, rejoice. Go in peace. Because you have been saved. And that salvation is not at all dependent on anything you have done. It is completely accomplished in Christ, who at your salvation immediately and fully saved you. I say to you, as Christ says, go in peace, go and rejoice in your salvation. To you that may be here this morning and you're not saved, I would plead with you, trust Him. Turn to Him for deliverance from sin. Turn to Him to be rescued from this which has enslaved you and separated you from the Father. Turn to Him and He will give you full deliverance. God, we ask that as we do close this time, Lord, I pray that Your Word would work in us. Lord, it would encourage us. Father, again, I thank You that those of us that are Your children, we can come knowing that because we have a high priest who has ascended into the heavens, who is ever living, making intercession for us, because we have this great high priest, we are saved to the uttermost. There's no question about His ability to save us.